the more that a leader can attach something that they're learning, a bit of theory, to an actual challenge that they're in and map out how to practice this specific leadership skill, the more effective it is. But we don't give, in most internal programs, we don't give enough room to practice those skills, to get the feedback in the business environment, because we're scared that if we are going to let somebody practice it, that everything's going to fall down. And so people go back to just then those old habits, their old ways of leading.
Welcome to the Weekly Leadership Experience, a place for leaders to get inspired, be challenged, and grow. I am your host, Rashad Oberlander. Let's get started. Today's episode of the Weekly Leadership Experience is brought to you by my 7-day Leadership Growth Challenge. It's a free challenge that I've created, and it's delivered by email over the course of 7 days. I've created 7 compelling questions to challenge various aspects of your leadership, the way you lead, and why you lead. Go to rashadoberlander.com and scroll down until you find the 7-day leadership challenge, or look for the link in the show notes. And now, on with the show. Hello, leaders, and welcome to this week's show. Joining me today is Dave McKeown. Dave helps individuals, teams, and organizations achieve excellence by doing the ordinary things extraordinarily well. He's the CEO of Outfield Leadership and author of The Self-Evolved Leader: Elevate Your Focus and Develop Your People in a World That Refuses to Slow Down. Dave has a wealth of experience in connecting individual and team performance to improved business results, with a particular focus on fast-growing, complex organizations. Dave started his career as a consultant at Accenture, quickly moving to become the COO and then president of Predictable Success, a boutique consultancy focused on helping complex businesses achieve scalability. As founder and CEO of Outfield Leadership, Dave now speaks, coaches, and trains on moving from execution to excellence. His goal is to help organizations build a culture of real, authentic, but ultimately results-driven leadership. Dave, welcome to the Weekly Leadership Experience.
Hey, Rashad. Thanks so much for having me here. It's great to be with you.
It's a pleasure to have you. I'm very excited to talk with you today. And I am excited to have you on the show to talk about your book, The Self-Evolved Leader, and what this means for leadership today. But before we get into that, I'd love to get a little context and backstory. So possibly a very big question, but can you share about life in Ireland growing up around serial entrepreneurship and what shaped your views on leadership?
Sure. Happy to. So I'm originally from Northern Ireland, from Belfast. And when I was growing up, my father was a serial entrepreneur. I ended up starting something like 42 companies by the time he was 35, which was kind of unheard of in Northern Ireland at the time, particularly because we were dealing with political and unrest. And so there wasn't a lot of innovation, wasn't a lot of enterprise or entrepreneurship. And I guess it started something early on in me that was just a fascination for what actually it meant to start, grow, and lead a business. And I think that kind of early seed stayed with me throughout my life and progression and career journey.
Yeah, definitely. Wow, 42 companies. I had no idea your dad was so prolific. that's quite something, especially by 35. Wow.
A lot of them were joint ventures or going in with other people. Some of them he was more involved with than others. But it was interesting. He brought the first Pizza Hut to Ireland. At the time, we didn't really have much in the way of, you know, fast service restaurants. So that was interesting to be able to, you know, have a couple of birthday parties at Pizza Hut and get free pizza. He owned an art gallery at one point. He started a tool and die manufacturer company. He had this weird fascination with just what it meant to start businesses, and that started him on a journey of ultimately going towards consulting and organizational growth advising, and then I guess, like I said, planted a seed super early on for me to explore a similar avenue.
Wow. And so did your dad sort of bring you in early on? Were you involved in it and exposed, sort of, or was it like, if you were interested, and if not, he let you go about your merry way?
Well, in the early years of my development, there really wasn't much of any involvement. It was just, it was the sort of thing that was interesting. You know, you'd go into to school and it was like, we'll talk about what your parents do. And people are like, my dad's a doctor and my dad's a lawyer and my dad's a fireman. And I remember going to my mum one day and just saying like, what do I say about my dad? And she was like, I don't know, just tell them that he kind of helps start businesses. And I was like, okay, that sounds kind of cool. So it was always more of an outsider looking in perspective whenever I was growing up as a kid. It wasn't really until I got into my college years, much older on. He had actually moved over to the United States throughout my teenage years. And whenever I was in college, I came out and started to intern for him, which basically meant just to do his grunt work. By this stage, he had given up the entrepreneurial side of things and had just gone into advising on growth and leadership development full time. And he was a solopreneur. And I came along for a couple of summers, got a chance to see what consulting looked like, got a chance to see what it really meant to be in the room of senior leaders of organizations, particularly pretty fast growing organizations, and the types of discussions and decisions that they needed to make. I really had this great opportunity to be a fly on the wall for that, which, funny enough, only further solidified my own personal interest in what it meant to really align a group of people around a common goal and begin to work towards it. And I guess took that early interest in business and started to give it a little bit more color and a little bit more nuance to it.
Certainly. I mean, it's an incredible legacy, I guess, that has been instilled in you from all this experience, good, bad, or otherwise, I suppose, right? But certainly it's rubbed off in some ways. You've got the book that you've written, as well as having started your own business now. So fast forwarding a little bit, you know, you've been leading your own business through a very difficult time. How's the COVID pandemic changed the way you think about leadership or life in general?
I think it's helped me to become much more intentional about what I want, in life. I think for a lot of people before, COVID, you know, busyness has this wonderful effect on us where it allows stuff that's maybe not as important or meaningful to kind of accrete over time, because you just get busy and stuff changes and morphs and you just kind of get through life. And with the pandemic, it slowed everything all the way down for a great deal of, particularly for people in the line of work that I'm in, a lot of speaking, a lot of group events, you know, all of that stopped, and just gave me the time and the opportunity to assess what is the type of work that I really enjoy doing, who are the types of people that I really want to work with, how do I want to spend my day, and not focus so much on some of the busy work that just comes into your day. So it helped me be a lot more intentional in that way. It's also helped me try to really assess my own self-worth and value and where that comes from. I think for probably 8 years before the pandemic hit, I was just go, 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 go. I was on a plane 3 weeks out of every four. I was gone, you know, anywhere between 15 and 25 days a month. And so much of my identity was brought up in that lifestyle and that way of being. And there are positives to that. I was having a good impact on the leaders and the leadership teams that I was working with. But whenever the pandemic hit and all of that stopped, I was really left trying to reflect on, well, what of that is my ego, and what of that is actually, where is my self-worth? Where does that come from? And just the last 18 months have been really helpful in helping me reflect on that. So, you know, actually 18 months gone from it, I personally am a much happier, more well-rounded, intentional person and leader.
That's really good. And that's a great outcome, I guess, from the whole pandemic situation of the last 18 months. And I sort of hope that a lot of people have been able to experience that, because, I mean, not specifically because of COVID, but I mean, certainly having started my podcast and been podcasting now over the last year and a bit, I sort of found some things along the same lines of what you're saying. Is like, you really have to focus on what's important, because otherwise you just drown in the busyness of everything. And it's not all important. It's a lot of it is just fluff and, you know, kind of useless ends.
Right. I've been thinking a lot recently about getting to a point where the fulfillment of your life's work is when you get to spend more time working on the things that you like to do and that you want to do versus the thing, and even sometimes the things you need to do, but it's the things that you should do. Some, you know, it's like, oh, I really should do that thing. That's almost always where there is less joy. And I think that, you know, just to put it back to listeners, that in your world of leadership and management, if you find yourself struggling to keep your head above water because you're focusing on the stuff that you should do rather than the stuff that you want or like, or sometimes even need to do, maybe there's a balance that needs to happen, a rebalancing that needs to happen there. Because a lot of managers and leaders spend too much time on the stuff that they should do rather than the stuff that they like and want to do.
Indeed. I think that's an interesting kind of differentiation and something worth noting. So write that down. What should you do versus want and need? Mm. Let's talk about self-evolved leadership now. I guess, first of all, what led you to write this book?
There were a couple of things. One, it's been a bucket list item for me ever since I got into the world of leadership development and growth consulting. There's something in that industry just about putting down your thoughts and your models and your methods in paper that solidifies it. The reason externally that I wanted to do it was to give a tool and a resource that any leader could pick up and really take 2 to 3 specific things away from it that would almost immediately impact their leadership for the better. It's funny. I had this little card that I scribbled out as I started writing the book right at the beginning that said, between the philosophical and the practical lies progress. And that was the underlying mantra that I had of the book. You know, I'm sure I can see behind you, Rashad, there's a ton of business books there. You're clearly an avid reader. There are so many business books and leadership books out there that you read it and it's one central theme that's basically repeated over 12 chapters in different versions with different case studies. And then you've got a bunch of real, practical how-to guides. And I wanted to write something in between the both, which had some really interesting ideas and perspectives, new ideas and perspectives on leadership, but that also stitched the gap up that would allow folks to take some practical stuff out of it. And so for you or anybody that reads it, you'll notice that it ebbs and flows between, hey, that's a really interesting idea, and also this is how you put it into practice.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like how you described that, and I appreciate the reasons why you wrote the book now. One of my many ideas, and I just haven't gotten around to because of time, was doing sort of these brief book reviews, and my criteria that I was coming up with was basically how readable is it? You know, because you can pick up some books that are really just hard reads. You know, they're very big headed, sort of lots of big words, deep concepts, which is great if that's your type of reading. But you know, how readable is it? How applicable is the information contained? And how easy is it to follow? So this was my idea. I was going to have this little book review thing, and those were going to be my criteria. So I like that your book is falling into sort of that model of mine.
And I think that's actually a great idea. If you were to do it, I think there'd be a ton of people that would find a lot of value in it. You know, I think that the way in which we're consuming content is really changing and morphing over time. And, you know, way back, obviously, whenever you and I were kids, there were always cliff notes for everything. And I think even now people are like, hey, just, you know, tell me in 10 minutes, what's this about? What are the key messages? How do I put this into practice? And, you know, allow me to benefit from the work that you did so that I can start to instill those lessons. So I think it's a great idea.
Well, I'll keep it on my list then. it's been confirmed as a good idea.
One other person has given me market validation.
One other person is going to listen to it.
And he happens to be an author, so in no way will be biased towards this service whatsoever.
Exactly. Awesome. Self-evolved leadership. Let's talk about, for the benefit of the listener, what it actually means and how is it different to other models of leadership?
Well, the first starting point is just in the term itself, self-evolved, which is some of the most effective leaders out there are not leaders that have waited for their organization to develop them or put them on some big leadership program or, you know, give them some big assignment to help them grow their leadership. But they're people that actively seek out and pursue routes, resources, and tools to grow as a leader, regardless of what the result is. You know, people that listen to your podcast, that you know, maybe go to conferences on their own, they read. And I wanted to really, if we were going to talk about a target audience, it would be leaders that are truly desirous of developing in and of themselves and not waiting for that to happen. And that runs the gamut from frontline leaders all the way up to C-level executives. When you start from that perspective, you actually have a really wonderful foundation for effective leadership because you value leadership in and of itself. You find that it's virtuous. And that's the perspective that I take, that leadership isn't necessarily about getting to an end goal, although that happens often to be a nice outcome. But if that's what you're always thinking about, hey, I need to develop my leadership skills so I can get X, Y, and Z, then you maybe want to take a pause and evaluate what really is your desire and your intention to become a great leader, because you strip out what you get out of it. And actually then it's much easier to build some of the skills and the mindsets that you need. And so starting from that premise of seeing leadership as a virtue, then allows you to view how you lead your people in a completely different way.
Mm. Interesting. And I think important because, you know, a lot of times if you're going to wait for someone else to provide you the development, you could be waiting a very long time and it ultimately, you know, it might not come to you. I mean, there is something to be said for that initiative and ownership of taking responsibility for your development.
Very much so. And, you know, there's a ton of surveys out there that they do every year that basically shows that there's a massive gap in the quality of leadership and leaders out there. And the gap actually is in their own mind, that way more leaders rate themselves as an excellent leader than their people do. And so that's a massive blind spot for folks. And waiting for our organizations of any size to develop us is not the answer to closing that gap. There are a ton of really good leadership training and development programs that are out there. And if you happen to find yourself in one, that's awesome. But taking that first step and saying, you know what, I'm going to do this regardless of what my organization puts in front of me, it makes you way more effective as a leader. It helps you build a much stronger culture with your team. It helps you achieve the goals that your team has, but it also helps you develop and grow the people that work for you, which is, in my perspective, one of the greatest outcomes for effective leadership.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm glad you kind of mentioned a little bit too about, you know, the organizations and the leadership development programs they do have. There's tons of stuff out there. I'm curious in your experience and in the organizations that you've had exposure to, you know, what is your opinion sort of the state of internal development programs, I guess? Because I'm a little sort of opinionated on that front. I think there's significant gaps in a lot of cases, particularly with leadership development. But I'm interested in your take on where we sit on those things today.
I think that it's always a step behind where it needs to be. And I don't know if that'll ever change. I think that there's a whole bunch of reasons behind that. Here's where most internal programs break down. They bring a bunch of leaders into a room. They say, okay, this is what it means to be a good leader. We're going to give you a bunch of training to do that. There might be some practical elements of that, and the more practical elements of that, the better. And then whether it's a one-day session or a 12-month program or whatever, these leaders who've been in this laboratory-like environment go out into the real world, and they're, you know, they've got 20 voicemails and 153 emails and a bunch of Slack messages. And there's not the ongoing support and accountability outside of whatever that development session is. And that's actually where the growth really happens, because you're not going to become a better leader just through osmosis, just by sitting in a room listening to somebody tell you the five traits of effective leader. And I do this. I mean, this is what I do for a living. I sit in a room and tell people the five traits of effective leadership or whatever. But what I also encourage my clients to do is to build long-lasting communities of leaders that can hold each other accountable, to talk through the challenges that they have. The more that a leader can attach something that they're learning, a bit of theory, to an actual challenge that they're in, and map out how to practice this specific leadership skill, the more effective it is. But we don't give, in most internal programs, we don't give enough room to practice those skills, to get the feedback in the business environment, because we're scared that if we are going to let somebody practice it, that everything's going to fall down. And so people go back to just then those old habits, their old ways of leading. So if you're listening and you're thinking about, or you're involved in building internal programs, focus on what happens after the session, on giving folks the opportunity to really put that stuff into practice and get feedback on it so that they can grow and develop in the long term.
Yeah, I think that is pretty key, is the practice component that seems to be missing a lot of times. So that's good. That peer-to-peer coaching, I think, is kind of important too, is building that actual community of people kind of coming together and supporting one another in the journey. We're not meant to do the life alone in whether that's in business or life,
Right.
We all need relationships, right?
Right. And the thing is as well, there's a couple of layers in making that peer-to-peer coaching work. Often where it starts is like, what's the issue that you're trying to solve? And it's usually a functional business issue, and leaders and managers will get in a room and they'll talk about that. And somebody will go, awesome, we've got my idea. And then we'll go out. But it's not often enough focused on developing the person. So where peer-to-peer coaching really is helpful is if you get a room full of people who feel safe enough to say, here's what I'm really struggling with as a leader for me. I'm terrible at having tough conversations, or I just can't seem to find a way to think strategically, or there's a requirement for me to be more innovative and I just don't have that in me. Now we're actually talking about real behavioral challenges rather than like, well, somebody on my team screwed that up and I had to go, fix it for them. The more that you can elevate those conversations so that you're talking about the long-term development of the person, the more impact that you'll have over the long run. And that applies not just in peer-to-peer coaching relationships. It applies in a leader-to-team member relationship. The more you can talk about those ongoing behavioral challenges with your people, the better. It just happens up and down the board, but that's the tough stuff to talk about. It's difficult. It requires a little bit of time and a little bit of vulnerability. It's sticky. It is sticky. And it requires somebody to turn up and go, you know what? I'm not perfect. I'm not like this be all end all fantastic leader. And that takes a degree of squashing our ego, which is a difficult thing for leaders to do.
Definitely. Definitely. Well, I mean, that's some key information and worth thinking about for anyone that does have influence on that internal development or even their own development. I mean, really some of the things that they should seek out in their own development, I think you've just identified, which I think brings us back nicely to talking a bit more about self-evolved leadership. And could you talk about a little bit the key pieces to work on as a self-evolved leader?
Sure. So let me frame it up by saying that, There's a cycle that leaders get stuck in, which keeps them focused on the day to day. And it's all based around the fact that we have given anybody the ability and opportunity to interrupt us at any time and essentially assign whatever priority they want on whatever that interruption is, which means that we're all living in a world where everything is urgent, basically. That causes most of our leaders to react through acts of heroism. So somebody on their team comes to them and asks, here's a problem, what should I do? We tell them, or worse still, we jump in and save the day. When we lead through those acts of heroism over the long run, over time, we start to develop learned helplessness in our people. So they stop thinking for themselves. They stop viewing potential options for their challenges. They basically just leave everything at your front door as the leader, which makes you the bottleneck, disempowers them, frustrates everybody. And it's a cycle that keeps us stuck in the day-to-day. We're sort of constantly in firefighting mode, in crisis mode. And it means that we don't get to work on the things like we talked about earlier, which is the stuff that we really like and enjoy doing. It's all the stuff that we should do. And so this dynamic plays out again and again and again in every organization across the world, pretty much. I want to find a way to break that cycle. And ultimately, the skill set and the mindset that a self-evolved leader develops is what breaks that cycle. So that's just to tee up the problem that we're trying to solve. Where it starts from is a mindset shift that says, as a leader, my goal is to help my team achieve their shared goals, and in doing so, to become the best version of themselves. That second part of that statement, I think, is not as well adapted and adopted as the first one. I think a lot of the old leadership models are, hey, your goal is to help your team achieve their goals. I mean, that's great. It's necessary, but it's not sufficient. Because the thing is, if that's all our drive is, then we can just steamroll in and save the day all and every day. But if we're focused on developing our people, which, like I said earlier, is the greatest legacy that you can leave as a leader, there's no room for you being the hero. You have to remove yourself from the story. Once you've got that mindset shift, then there are a series of steps that a leader can go through, which I'm more than happy to talk about, but just want to pause there and see what your thoughts are.
Mm. I mean, like, the whole idea of shifting the mindset, I think, is the sticky point, right? Because it's the kind of age old challenge of, like, I can do it better, I can do it faster, I can do it and know it's done right, and all those things that make me want to jump in and be the hero with my team, right? When there's a problem, it's like, I need to solve this fast because there's 15 other things that still need to be done before I can actually leave and go home for the day, you know? And so it's taking the time to slow down and remove yourself from the equation as the problem solver or the hero, as you've said, to allow space for your team to come up with a solution or find a resolution.
Right. And the big part actually of that mindset shift that's really sticky is being truly honest with yourself about whether you want to make the transition or not. Because here's the thing, a lot of leaders actually love getting stuck in that cycle, because there's nothing more interesting than a new crisis or a new problem to solve, because that's what I'm good at. I get to jump in and do that. And in some ways, that's actually fine. So long as you're aware of it, so long as you know that that's what you like to do, you're not really leading. You're sort of a kind of co-team member. You're kind of the savior, but you're not a leader. You know what? There are some teams that I've worked with and some leaders that ultimately they get to that point and they say, you know what, Dave, I don't want to make this transition. I say, that's fine. Just be really intentional about it. Communicate with your team about the reality of this situation. They're going to know that over time, they're not going to grow and develop. And you're going to be stuck in this sort of sense of low level anxiety that you live in. And some people are like, actually, you know what? That's fine. I want to live there. But if you truly want to be an effective leader, you've got to make the transition, because you can't scale that. That's not effective leadership. That's just you being the hero. You're the center of the story, and it's personified on you. If you were to not be in the room that day, then everything would fall apart. And so if you want to make the shift and you want to get to the point where you're actually building a team that outlasts you, that you're leaving a legacy, that you have the opportunity to move on to bigger and brighter and better things, you got to make the shift. And there are a lot of leaders that go, oh, I see that. Yes, let me make the shift. Where it really becomes problematic is leaders that pay lip service to that shift. They're like, yeah, I want to do that, but really they don't. And they're not honest with themselves. They're not honest with their team. They pretend like they want to make that shift, but their behaviors are just get stuck in that old way. And so much of what we do in our day-to-day lives, and particularly with leaders and managers, is so habitual and reactive. We don't spend enough time thinking about why we behave or respond in a certain way. So again, if you're listening and any of these, this is resonating with you, my advice and guidance to you is, be really intentional about what sort of leader you want to be and communicate that with your team, and then go do that to your best of your ability.
Yeah. Like, that intention, I think, is so key. And I guess really just owning that, like, I'm okay being the hero, and the consequences that come with it, or, you know, the opposite, right? Like, I'm okay. You know what? no, I don't want to be that. And I'm understanding what's going to come with that side of the story.
Right.
Because I think,
I was going to say, there's nothing inherently morally wrong with that. It's not, you know, you're not causing ethical issues. You're not growing your people and you're probably frustrating them. But the other thing is, if you're intentional about it, you show up and you're like, this is how I am. If you work for me, this is the way that it's going to be. You get the option. You want to stick around, you want to stay around and work in that environment or not, then that's fine. And there might be some people that are like, hey, yeah, actually, you know what? I don't mind you being the hero. Just tell me what to do. I'll go do it. I mean, that's fine. I think that if you're going to stay there, be intentional about it. But I would encourage you to think about the other, about making the shift, because you will have a much longer lasting impact on your team, on your clients, on your organization, on your own career development, on your own career growth. You know, the folks that get caught in that cycle of mediocrity don't rise as well or as fast as other folks throughout the organization.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, well, I mean, it's like just to wrap up the my thought on it is I just see what you're saying and it just hits me so hard that I think that just people, they just don't think about it hard enough that, you know, I'm going to be this way, I'm going to be that way. Yeah, but what does that really mean? Like, you know, and I think that's where, like you said, the well-intentioned person might pay lip service to it and sort of now they've put it out there that they're going to be this way or that way, but then they come back to these old habits because they haven't thought about hard enough. Oh, I actually have to work at this.
Ooh, right.
Yeah. I actually have to do something, right?
You know, the road to our goals is littered with well intentions, right? With good intention, right? You know, it's why on January 21, almost everybody's New Year's resolutions are out the window, because we were well intentioned when we woke up on January 1, but we didn't do anything to like physically change what was happening around us. And you're never going to make those shifts unless you start to change things around you.
Yeah, certainly. I'd almost love to see a time lapse of the gym membership on January like 1st and 2nd when it's packed. I mean, you know, 20-30 days later is probably quite a bit different.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I remember going in pre-pandemic to our gym on January, the weekend after New Year's, and thinking, gosh, there's so many people here, so many new people. And you're right, by the end of January, like half of them are gone. You're back to the regulars. And,
that's right.
And like you said, so much of that is not because they're bad people. Definitely not. There's nothing morally or ethically wrong with that. It's just you set a goal, but you don't really think through what that really means in terms of your behavioral shift and changing your environment to achieve that. And leadership is no different. You're only going to grow and develop if you're able to set those goals, understand your intentions, and then change the environment around you.
Certainly. Well, that's good. I think you've really identified a number of things that sort of get in the way of being able to work on your development and be a self-evolved leader. So there's a number of things there to take note of as far as what's holding that back. And if there's anything else you want to add to that, certainly jump in. But otherwise, love for you to sort of wrap up the part, this large part of the conversation, with anything really important that you want people to know about self-evolved leadership.
The mantra that I've had over the last year has been control what you can control and don't worry about the rest. And I think that's becoming more and more, I don't think that mantra is ever going to go away for me. And I think it's been particularly helpful for a lot of leaders out there. And it is understanding that there's a whole bunch of stuff outside of us that's going on, and we can spend time worrying about it, or we can just take a realistic understanding of what we can control and really try to impact change on that in the most powerful way. And the funny thing that you find is, when you get to the edges of that sandbox that you have in and you start to impact change, that sandbox starts to grow over time, and you're never going to be able to control everything, but you certainly are able to influence a much greater sphere outside of that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a great, great thing to live by. Control what you can, forget about the rest, I think. I can use that some days for sure. Listen, this has been a good conversation. I've got two more questions for you, and then I'd love for you to plug what you're doing, your book, where people can connect with you. But first of all, what is one thing you know about life or leadership that you wish everyone knew?
It's all driven by ego. nothing that we do. We think that we control our actions and our thoughts way more than we do. It's all based on our belief of who we are. And the more that you can lock into that and understand that and unlock it, and be intentional about it, the greater every relationship in your life will be. I'm just learning that as I get older, as I grow older, you know, it's like nothing I do, no action that I take is by chance. It's all driven from some part of my ego that has been grown and developed over the last 30 whatever years, and just understanding that, being intentional about it, communicating it, and just giving yourself a break sometimes whenever things come out and you're like, that wasn't great.
Definitely. Yeah, knowing yourself is important. I mean, and another word that sort of gets misconstrued a lot of times, ego, right? Ego doesn't have to be a bad thing. Like, oh, he's got a big ego. But right. As long as he understands what's going on.
For sure. And we all have egos. I think that's the thing. We're either like, he's got a big ego and I don't, you know, I'm not very egotistical. It doesn't mean that. It means that it's that our self reflection of who we are, what the narratives that we tell ourselves about who we are, I think is how I best understand my ego anyway. Mm-hmm.
Cool. When it's all said and done, what three words do you want used to describe your life?
Ooh, gosh, three words. To take the cop out, but also the theme of this interview, lived with intention. So it's a sentence, but there are three words. I think that
I like
lived
it.
With intention.
Very cool. Yeah. Well, I mean, definitely to the theme of the podcast, and but important. Awesome. Well, let us know where we can connect with you, find your book, and where you want to send people.
Best place to go find out more about me is davemckeown.com. You can find information about my keynote speaking, my training, my consulting, the book as well. Book's available on Amazon and all good bookstores. I'm also pretty active on LinkedIn and Twitter, Dave McKeown, and would love to connect with anybody there.
Awesome. Cool. Well, make sure you check out the show notes for all those links. And it's been fantastic, Dave. Thank you so much for joining me on the show today. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me, Rashad. Appreciate it.
If you've enjoyed what you've heard today, would you head over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts and subscribe, leave me a rating, leave me a review, and share this with a friend. It spreads the word and helps the podcast grow. You can also find me on social media at R.E. Oberlander. Until next time, stay awesome.